Hello, and welcome to Parenting Help with Vigeo Behavior Consulting. Join us for conversations with experts in the fields of cognitive behavior, mental health, behavior analysis, education, and child psychology. On this podcast, we examine the challenges that parents are facing and share insights and strategies that have helped other parents with similar issues. I'm your host, Katie Palmer. I'm a parenting coach and board-certified behavior analyst. I'm also the owner of Vigeo Behavior Consulting. I am fortunate to be able to engage in conversations with some incredible professionals whose depth and breadth of experience can offer guidance for parents who are looking for new ideas. I hope you find this podcast useful, engaging, and insightful. Hello and welcome, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to introduce everyone to Dr. Sarah Cassidy, who wears so many hats. She is the founder and director of the Smithfield Clinic. Did I say that right? And that is in, it's in Athboy?
Mm-hmm. Athboy, County Meath in Ireland, that's correct.
In Ireland. She is also the co-founder and co-director of the new New England Center for OCD and Anxiety, the Ireland branch. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that later today. She is the co-founder and chief education officer at RaiseYourIQ.com. And if you have not been there, that is a fascinating and wonderful space to explore. She is also a chartered psychologist, Psychological Society of Ireland, as well as a council member of the PSI, a member of the Division of Clinical Child and Adolescent Psychologists for the American Psychological Association. She's a very active committee member and former chairperson of the Association of Contextual Behavioral Science Membership Committee. She does amazing work as a lecturer in child educational and counseling psychology. And she has recently co-authored Tired of Anxiety, A Kid's Guide to Befriending Scary Thoughts and Living Your Life Anyway, that she co-authored with Lisa Coyne. So welcome, Dr. Cassidy. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you so much, Katie, for having me. I'm absolutely honored to be here and always delighted when people are interested in my work and my research. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes, and you may know I've been inspired by your work for many years since I first heard you speak at a conference. And if there's anything we left out of the introduction, please feel free to add that in there. And can you share a little bit with the audience about how you work with children and families?
Sure. Yeah. Well, like you mentioned, I wear a lot. I like to say I wear a lot of hats, and I do a lot of jobs. And sometimes I forget, you know, I like to say, which job am I doing today? Because I do kind of weave in and out of a lot of spaces. And I've been working in the school system in Ireland for about 20 years. And my primary role for a lot of years has been, educational child and adolescent psychologist and doing a lot of assessments. Right. And I think a lot of my best work across the years really has been born out of a frustration with kind of wondering, when I'm working with children or families, kind of wondering, why are things being done the way they're being done? Or, and a lot of this, of course, is probably a lack of resources and I think, people tend to do better when they know better. But in many systems or in many families, people don't have access to adequate resources, or there often just isn't enough to go around. And so I find in a lot of times, a lot of the families that I work with are just hugely frustrated, or a lot of the teachers I work with are hugely frustrated. And a lot of the kids I work with are hugely frustrated.
Yes, because across the board.
I find that a lot of the work that I have been driven to do across the years has kind of been born of that frustration. So, when I went back originally to do my PhD with Brian Roach, it was around kind of a frustration about, we need to do more here, because mm-hmm. I was working with families and finding that I felt there was more that people could do. whether that be the individual families themselves. And I was meeting lots and lots of families that really wanted to do more for their kids, or I was working with kids that were distressed, and teachers that wanted to help them, and families that really wanted to work in more effective or compassionate or successful ways with their kids. And it just wasn't happening. And I wanted to figure out why, you know, why is this not happening?
One of the things that I'm noticing in the work that I do, whether I'm in an educational setting or working with parents or clinicians, BCBAs, the compassion and the drive to help, mm-hmm. and the desire to do more for mm-hmm. our children is present for everyone. And sometimes those toolboxes are missing a piece, or they've tried everything that they know how to try, and they just are lost and don't know what else to do. How, tell me a little more. Sorry, I sort of interrupted.
No, you didn't. And please interrupt me at any stage, because I tend to go off on a lot of rambles. It usually surprises me when a bell rings, or when I suddenly realize an hour is up. You know, how long is my time? How long is a piece of string? Actually, my very good friend, Ashlyn Curtin, that I do a lot of ACT training with, I remember her asking how long did I need for my training, or particular training that we're going to do together. And I remember saying to her, you know, the day when you tell me my training will be 1800 hours will be, you know, that's going to be the day that I might run out of things to say about a particular topic. So, you know, please feel free to interrupt me at any point in time. But yeah, you know, I hear you pointing to compassion, and I feel like, you know, people generally want to do the best by children and families. And yet most of the families that I see here in our clinic, so I'm primarily in private practice now, although I also work for the National Educational Psychological Services here in Ireland. I'm part of a private practice branch that goes around to schools. And at one point, in fact, I covered 10 different counties for the National Ed Psych Service, traveling around to different schools. And one of the things that I was really, really struck by was, again, you know, this kind of want for more things to happen, but an inability to do them. Yeah. And, you know, teachers are overstretched, parents are overstretched, and there's often this, you know, kind of limited ability to do the things that need to be done. So in private practices, you know, I feel like we just need to do more, and sometimes we can't do it. And so how do we do those things? Yeah. So I suppose that has driven me, you know, one of your questions is, you know, what has driven me to do the work that I'm doing? And, you know, that drove me to do a PhD to figure out, you know, I think behavior analysis has a lot of answers. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, behavior analysts have really gotten a bad name in the last few years. And I think it's really, really unfortunate, because of course we have so many, you know, and I came to behavior analysis, you know, everything that I've always known about behavior analysis has been, you know, figure out what the function of a behavior is. You know, if an intervention isn't working for a family, then it isn't working.
Yes.
And you need to get in underneath that, and, you know, could be the best intervention in the world, but if it isn't working for a family, then it simply isn't working.
And so then we need to try again. We need to go back and try.
Yeah. And, you know, find out what the function is of that behavior, and get in under what it is, and come sideways or look underneath. And
look a little deeper in the context. What am I missing? And that's exactly the question I love. What am I missing as the...
What am I missing? Exactly. What am I missing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did your PhD studies lead you into this expansion of what I understand expansion into your clinical work, mm-hmm. also like bringing a whole new division or a chapter branch of the New England Center for OCD into Ireland?
Yeah. So I've been doing kind of the, you know, my Smithfield Clinic is my private practice here. And, you know, we had been doing, you know, educational assessments for a lot of years, and we do neurodevelopmental assessments around, you know, ADHD and autism. And we have been working, I'm a peer-reviewed ACT trainer as well, and we have been doing a lot of assessments there around anxiety. And I suppose what I was finding was we were treating with ACT and RFT based methods. We were treating what I would call kind of garden variety anxiety. And I just didn't feel like we were just getting in and we weren't getting our teeth into it. I heard you use that phrase earlier when we were having our pre-podcast conversation. We just weren't really getting our teeth properly into what was happening. And I just didn't feel like I was getting in under it enough. And we just weren't shifting it, you know, just weren't moving it the way it needed to be moved. And even when I felt like I had done my best piece of work, and you know me, Katie, from our years of conversing at conferences, you know, I'm fairly tenacious when, you know, when I want to get to the bottom of something, I'm fairly persistent. And I just didn't feel like, and so I would have done what I felt like was my best piece of work with a child or a family. And I'm going to circle back around that, you know, to the way that I work with families is, you know, I believe collaborative work, you know, it's not, and that's the ACT approach too. So remind me to circle back around to that. But I really felt like I had done my best piece of work. And, you know, sometimes we would then refer a child on to our local child and adolescent mental health services. And, you know, maybe they had a diagnosis of OCD or maybe more severe and enduring anxiety. And even after they had gone on to a more intensive outpatient service or sometimes even to inpatient service, I really didn't feel like even after going there, they were getting the type of services or support that was really shifting that anxiety for them. And to me, I didn't actually know, you know, why is it that this wasn't happening for them? You know, why was the anxiety not moving or shifting or changing? And why were their lives not improving as a result of what I felt was my best effort and what I could only assume was the best effort of the local services as well. And then around that time, I remember hearing Lisa Coyne, who wasn't known to me at the time, other than kind of, you know, having heard her name or around the ACT circles. But I remember hearing her speak at a training led by my friend Ashton Curtin. And Lisa was an invited speaker. And I remember hearing her speak about the way she worked with teens in her work at Harvard's McLean's inpatient unit. I don't think unit is the correct word, but the OCDI junior.
Yeah.
I remember hearing her speak about it. And I remember just sort of like nearly having, you know, kind of a heart skip a beat moment. And thinking, oh, you know, this is how it's done, you know, mm-hmm. because it was just you know, a fundamental shift, you know, in how we looked at anxiety. And it's like that, you know, that moment, let's say when you're at the top of a roller coaster and, you know, you have that moment where you decide like, you know, am I going to hold on, you know, for dear life and close my eyes? You know, and go down at breakneck speed, never, ever, ever opening your eyes? Or is there going to be that moment, you know, where you slowly disengage your fingers and you open your eyes, you know, and there's that second of, yeah, throw the arms up in the air, you know, and yes, the stomach drops out from underneath you, but there's also that split second, you know, of absolute sheer unadulterated exhilaration where you realize, I have got this.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that was like fundamental shift when I realized, and like as a behavior analyst, you know, that's a move from aversive, you know, coercive control to moving towards values, you know, so instead of running away from fear, that's a seeking of joy. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I heard Lisa Coyne speak that I realized, like, in practice, here is how you do this. Mm-hmm. And all along, what we've been doing is, you know, the equivalent of, you know, shoving a child in the gate at school, you know, like, let's just get them over the threshold, shove them in the gates, stuff them in the door, quickly lock the door. We did it, you know.
We'll deal with how they feel afterwards. Right.
Exactly. Never mind. We got them in the door. Our job is done here. And I thought, no, actually, that's not it. You know, we need to get them to the moment where they are actually willing to let go of their hands at the top of that roller coaster and say, I choose this. I choose this. I want this. I want that moment where I open my eyes and I say, yes, I want this. This is my life and I choose it.
Yeah.
And I remember when I heard Lisa speak that day and I thought, oh, you know, this is how we do it. And so, you know, from that day forward, I jokingly say I stopped Lisa Coyne. It's not really a joke because I sort of did. We're good friends now. So I can say that. I can say that. And she knows I say that. But I started, you know, speaking to Lisa and collaborating with her on a lot of different pieces of research and practice. And about a year ago, we started the Ireland branch of New England Center for OCD and Anxiety here, you know, from my little clinic in rural Ireland. But we've also, you know, just published Tired of Anxiety for Kids, and Tired of Anxiety for Teens is already with the publisher. So that'll be out this summer. And that's, you know, part two of a 5-part series. So we'll have one for young adults and we'll have a parent's companion for the kids book and for the teens book.
Can we get a little peek on for the parents? Is there a way for you to talk a little bit about, for instance, I've handed that book to people. I've said, this, go get this book. Or I literally did hand my copy to a friend and said, this is a wonderful book. And my friend asked me, do I give it to my child to read or do I read it to them? And I said, yes.
Yeah. Yes to both.
So how do parents, like, because there are lots of books out there, but I don't want to talk about the other ones. We'll talk about yours. How do we as parents bring a piece of material to life for our children and for ourselves in ways that they begin to embody rather than just sort of washing over them in a surface way?
Beautiful question. And I think it's multi-layered. And you know, and let me talk to you a little bit about Tired of Anxiety, and let me talk to you about Art Club too, because, you know, Tired of Anxiety came about in lots of ways. One is that I was doing lots of work, you know, guided by Lisa Coyne, you know, guided by ACT. You know, I had been doing ACT for a lot of years, and, you know, my work around anxiety, I think, got better when I started working with Lisa Coyne and when I, you know, started learning about, you know, exposure and response prevention. But also when I started learning about, you know, the fine act of letting go, you know, and, you know, as a lifelong anxious person myself, you know, learning about that piece of, like, you know, what does it mean to actually open your eyes? So it's not just about getting yourself over the threshold, you know, it's also about the willingness to let go. And so, you know, lots of different things. And I do think it's multi-layered. But when we started, when we were working on Tired of Anxiety, or actually after the book was already written, I had a lot of young people here attending Smithfield Clinic. We didn't have NCOA yet, but we were in the process of setting it up. But we had a lot of young people that were attending Smithfield Clinic for the treatment of severe anxiety. And we had kids and we had teens. We're cradle to grave service, though we don't have any people in the cradle or in the grave. They don't tend to attend. But we had lots of kids attending, and I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool? You know, a lot of them happened to be super artsy kind of kids. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if they, you know, did some of the artwork that you see on the cover of the book? And wouldn't it be cool if they met with us every week and talked about their anxiety and maybe worked through the book with us and gave us a little bit of feedback around the language in the book? And, you know, they said, you know, does this make sense to you? Because I had been using, so the book, as you've read it, is essentially, if one of the kids that you work with or that your families work with or that attend you attended me, this book is essentially every single solitary thing I'd say to them in a one-to-one session. Mm. And, you know, these are all the exercises that I would do with them in a one-to-one session. But what I wanted to know was, so I know this sort of thing works if you're attending me in a one-to-one session, but the information I wanted from the kids that attended Art Club was, if you were just reading that yourself at home, Like, I know it works when I'm telling it to you, but then I can see your face and I can see, you know, if you're looking at me blankly, if you're staring out the window, if your eyes are glazing over. I don't know that if you're at home reading it by yourself. So we tested this out on a group of younger kids and a group of teenagers. And we had them come back every week. We had them, you know, write, draw, you know, put their shapes all over the book. And we also had them tell us, does the language make sense to you? You know, are the words too big? Are the words too small? Are the words in between? Do you think the words are, you know, are they silly? Like, you know, this was an Irish audience. And so where they didn't like the language or the words, or, you know, they told us and we changed them. And
this is such a beautiful, like, I'm imagining just the collaborative process that involves the folks that we want to help in the creation of a tool.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I feel like when I think about Art Club, like when I think about all the things not being done, you know, out there in mental health spaces and, you know, all during COVID. Actually the story of Art Club is quite, you know, emotional for me, because we couldn't do a lot of the things that we normally do, you know, because of COVID. And I approached our local Louth, it's called Louth Meath Education and Training Board. And we had intended to run Art Club here in my clinic. And we were intending to run it in our waiting room. The waiting room is fairly big. And the Art Club groups were kind of like eight to 10 kids in each group. But because of the restrictions, you know, the necessary restrictions associated with COVID, we couldn't have them the necessary, I think it was six foot apart, I think, with the Irish guidelines, or 3 meters, whatever was the 2 meters apart. We couldn't safely do it here in our waiting room. But there's a building close to us called LMETB, Louth Meath Education Training Board, where they had this enormous old home ec room and this big tall rooms, and it's really well ventilated. And so we just rang up and said, you know, is there any chance we could use that giant old room? Nobody's using it. The building is empty. And they weren't really using it, and they checked, and we had a contact. And, you know, so initially then they were giving us a price for it. And I said, you know, this is a community project, and I actually think that we should be getting that for free. And so it went around the houses a few more times, and eventually they agreed with me that yes, indeed, they should be giving it to us for free. And they did, you know, which I thought, you know, isn't that magnificent? So like all through COVID, and, you know, half the mental health services in the country were closed.
Yeah.
Not only were we not closed, but we were also able to run this, you know, additional mental health project for, you know, some of the kids had, you know, pretty significant anxiety at the height of a time where anxiety rates were through the roof. Yeah. And so we ran this really cool project, and we got really great feedback for a book that, you know, we were writing anyway, but we got to make our book so much better because all these amazing kids gave us very real feedback. And as they went through it, you know, they did the artwork in the book, they, you know, gave us feedback on the language, they did all the actual exercises in the book exploring their very real anxiety, they talked about it with each other and with us. And at the end of it, you know, I know your listeners can't see this, but like, you know, they actually produced, you know, all the monsters on the cover, you know, and all the little bits and pieces that you see kind of all throughout the book was all actually done by the kids in Art Club. And as a really nice exposure to their own anxiety, at the very end of Art Club, we also held an art exhibit where we framed some of the pieces of their artwork and we put it up all over the wall of the LMETB building, and all the other parents and all the other kids from the two different art clubs. And they all came, you know, and they looked at each other's artwork. And like, it was a very cool kind of a natural exposure, you know, to their own anxiety and to, you know, kind of the social piece around, you know, meeting each other.
In a context where they had become invested in this project beyond their own work. And do you feel that component of it
I think it was
allowed them to tolerate those feelings.
Oh, very much so. And then the other thing that, you know, a lot of the kids that we work with would, you know, be hugely socially anxious. And some of the kids that we work with would have huge rates of school avoidance. Mm-hmm. And yet they were turning up every week, you know, to a school type building and, you know, exposing themselves to, you know, social situations, a school setting, mm-hmm. classroom setting, you know, everything that looks and feels a lot like school, to performance anxiety. We were asking them to do new things. We were asking them to, you know, do some work in front of some people, to hang it up on a wall. A lot of them have, you know, quite a lot of, you know, kind of perfectionist tendencies. Yeah. And we were telling them to do something. And we knew a lot of them were quite artsy types. And we also knew at all points throughout the book that it wasn't actually me making the decisions on which artwork was going in the book. It was some unnamed, unnamed to me, but it was actually the publisher and an editing team choosing which pieces would go in the book and which wouldn't. So they could do that.
We had no idea.
So it could be that they could do the best work in the entire world. And yet some, you know, again, I'm not going to say nameless person, but like it could all just be, sorry, not good enough. And, you know, thrown out at the end. So it was like, as far as a natural exposure goes, you know, it was an extraordinary opportunity for natural exposure. And they all, you know, opened their eyes, let go of the fingers, and they, you know, got in there and they did it. You know, so it was an extraordinary project. And you know, and the book was the outcome. So I'm so you know, proud of the collaboration that took part for Art Club and the Tired of Anxiety, you know, project, not just the book, but, you know, the whole project was exploring.
You mentioned collaboration in the context of the ACT approach earlier and asked me to sort of circle us back. That when I think about the concepts and the skills that we teach, you know, when I use acceptance and commitment training, how do you collaborate with families? What is the way in which you help parents to help their children when the children aren't, you know, at their weekly session at the clinic?
Such a good question, Katie. So, and that probably, I mean, I think that I'm going to sound very boastful here. I think I'm a very good therapist.
I believe you.
You know, like I think my kids would probably disagree. I think I'm a good parent. And like, I'm really lucky. I had extraordinary parents. I don't know where they got their skills. Like, my dad is the 13th of 14 children. And my dad had this just incredible way of saying things like, you know, if we didn't know something, it was almost like you don't know it yet. You know, mm-hmm. you'll learn that next year, or give it a chance, or give him a chance. He'll get there. You don't know what it's like to walk in his shoes. You know, I don't know where my dad got this from. Like, he was, you know, a man not of his time. I mean, he still is a man not of his time. You know, quite extraordinary. But like, I think that like, I got really lucky in that department, that I had a lot of really good models for parenting, and basically I just lucked out, you know. So like, when I'm in a therapy session, I try and model a lot of those skills for a child that I'm working with. And that's not that difficult for me to do in that hour. Because, I mean, I've got a PhD, you know, in child development, and I've spent a huge amount of time working on honing those skills. And I'm a voracious reader. So anytime I hear a new thing about a technique that works for managing or, you know, coping with, you know, challenging behaviors, well, I'm going to read that book too. But when you're there, like in a difficult moment with your child, you know, I mean, I find that difficult. So
bills don't always show up so easily.
They don't always show up, you know. So here's the thing, and this is, sorry about my circuitous route to this point, you know, and this is where I think the collaboration is so important. So I, Sarah Cassidy, think I can do a great job of a therapy session for 1 hour, you know, but 1 hour is not the entire week. One hour is not the entire year. So we really need collaborative efforts, and you know, for collaboration to really work well, you know, we need good assessment, we need good therapy, we need ongoing, we need the wraparound. And so, like with Smithfield Clinic, with NCOA, that's New England Center for OCD and Anxiety, you know, with the books that myself and Lisa are writing, the Tired of Anxiety series. I'm also writing a diary, an ACT diary, with Nick Hooper and Duncan Gillard and Freddie Jackson Brown, but also the Magpie series. You know, what we're trying to do is get these other, you know, techniques and processes out into the water, because 1 hour of therapy is not enough, you know, and like, it's not enough to just, like, for me, you know, I don't have a magic wand. I often joke about that. In fact, my daughter's got some magnificent magic wands that light up and make music, you know, and I say, you know, if I can wave this around, great, you know, but great, that's 3 seconds. You know, what about that moment where, you know, your child is in the middle of a really, really difficult moment? You know, like, how do you weather those storms when your kid's having a really hard time and you're exhausted, or you're trying to get out the door to work, or, you know, maybe you've got 3 other kids besides that.
Yes.
And you're hungry or you're tired. You know, so like, in a perfectly designed clinic setting, great, do your best therapy, amazing, you know, here's a box of medals, but that's not where the real work happens. You know, so like, that's why we need collaborative efforts. And like, I think, like, something that I'd say to all my clinicians, and, you know, I've been training teachers for a lot of years and training psychologists and behavior analysts for a lot of years. You know, it's not enough for me to, you know, stand at the top of a room and like spout loads of nonsense. And hopefully I'm not spouting nonsense. Hopefully I'm giving some good skills somewhere, but the people that I'm speaking to, they have to be able to bring that information away and do something with it. So in order for a child that I'm working with to be able to bring that information away and do something with, those skills have to be practicable. And the best way for them to be practicable is for me to also be able to communicate that somehow to parents, to teachers. You know, how do we really do the wraparound?
Yes.
So, you know, we need to really, really listen to parents, and we need to somehow, you know, whether we pour it into the water, whether we write it into a book, you know, whether, you know, we do like podcasts like you're doing here, we need to somehow get it out in all the mediums such that the information is picked up and generalized to all the settings where people can pick it up and bring it with them to their real lives. And I suppose that's what I mean. In a roundabout way, that's what I mean by collaboration.
Oh, well, I think it's the most rich version of, you know, a definition of collaboration is when we can all be working together across settings to support the growth of these kiddos. And you know, from the work that I've done, that is so much a part of my philosophy, is helping the adults connect with each other, connect with the kids, and change the context around the child, so the child can then practice those skills that they maybe are learning in a once weekly therapy session, and it can be supported in all the contexts. And so they're encountering success with these new skills outside of the clinic space.
Of course.
And I love what you mentioned about just all the pieces that parents have to deal with, and we're asking them to practice these skills with their child in a moment that is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what shows up for them and noticing what's getting in their own way can be as much of a struggle as implementing the skill in the context of being tired and the dog needs to go out and trying to get somewhere on time and the other kids in the room.
And that's why I think it's funny to like pull out a magic wand, because like it's ridiculous. You know, like, are you really going to ask me to do that right now? You know, that's almost ridiculous. It's almost ridiculous right at this moment to suggest I do something else. Like, can you not see all like that the whole world is falling down around me right now?
Right. And I'm in charge. Like, it's all on me.
Yeah. Don't you see? Can't you see what's happening here? Yeah. I know. And I mean, I remember thinking like that I was going to be a great parent before I had a kid. And then when I had my first child, I was like, oh, this is really bloody difficult. And then I remember thinking I was actually a pretty good parent, and then having another child. You know, it's so much harder when there's a couple of them, and then having a third child, then being like, oh, holy shit.
This and they're all different, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I think parenting is just an absolutely superhuman job. Yes. And I mean, it's just incredibly difficult what parents have to go through. And I shouldn't say have to go through, you know, choose to go through. And like, you know, not that I would ever.
And we'll walk through fire to go through, right?
Like, we'll walk through fire to go through, definitely. Yeah. But it's disingenuous to assume, I think, that it's not difficult, because it can be incredibly difficult at times. And not to honor that too is probably not authentic.
Yeah, agreed. I'm also mindful of our time, so I believe that you have a football match to get to.
Oh gosh, yes. And the whole parenting thing, Katie.
The whole parenting business is happening right now in this moment. This is, as I knew it would be, wonderful and delightful. And I do hope that I can convince you to come back and talk a little bit more. Yeah. Especially, we didn't get to talk much about magpies and some of the activities that you've built into that program, which seems to be going so well so far. And that manual that's coming out. And there are things that parents can carry into the home from that. So,
and let me, before we hang up, mention that if any of your listeners are going to ACBS in July with my extraordinary postdoc students, Dr. L. Kirsten and Dr. Allison Stapleton, we are giving workshops on magpies, the emotional regulation program. And I think we are also doing the self-esteem program, which are both really good modules in the magpies program. So
it's so exciting. Well,
yes.
Yeah. So trip to Cyprus.
A trip to Cyprus, everybody.
Is well worth it, for sure. for some of that training. That's wonderful. Sarah, thank you so much for being here with us. And I may try to talk you into another visit so that we can continue this conversation.
I'd be delighted. Great. Thank you so much for having me, Katie. And thank you so much to all your listeners for listening. I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Please consider checking out the website www.vigiobx.com to find more helpful resources from our guests and from other professionals using acceptance and commitment training to support parents and children. You can leave comments or requests on the podcast page, find more information about our guests, and subscribe to our newsletter as well. We have a recommended book list, a blog, and options for a free 30-minute consultation if you're interested in working with us. Go gently and have a great day.